The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat for our very first show of 2020. I am Kyle Klingman of Track Wrestling, along with the Blue Horse, Andy Hamilton, also of Track Wrestling. He's basking in the glory of his masterpiece that was the 2019 year in review. Congratulations on putting such a wonderful piece together. Everyone's enjoyed it.
You enjoyed it too.
I did. I've listened to it a couple times and thoroughly enjoyed it. Couple times all the way through, and then I went back to my favorite little spots.
What are your favorite little spots, Kyle?
I liked the Bill's Attic, where you kind of just spliced it in there. I liked a lot of the John Smith sayings that he had in there, especially the one that was pointed at Chuck Yeagla after the 1998 dual meet. I thought that was absolutely a stitch. So
he was drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, a lot of little nuggets in there that I enjoyed. So if you're listening to this show right now, our first show of 2020, and you have not listened to Andrew's masterpiece, please go and do it. It took him over 20 hours to splice all of that together. So do yourself a favor and listen to his work. It might have been more than 20 hours.
I'm not proud of that.
What? That it took 20 hours? Uh-huh. What? You're not proud of creating something that's brought people joy?
Just not the time investment.
What was it? You got to be honest.
30 I don't hours, know. No, maybe? No, it wasn't 30.
29?
It wasn't 30. I don't know. I did it like a lot of just, like a lot of it was chopped up in free time in the hotel down in Fort Lauderdale and listening to shows on the plane. So that's, you know, some dead time there, airports, stuff like that.
It adds up quick, though.
Yeah.
It adds up quick. I'm guessing it was over 20 hours. I'm going to say in the 25 range. But
could have been.
You hit a grand slam with that one. Congratulations. Go back and listen to it. This is our first show of the year. We are in an Olympic year. We're in a leap year. And there's so many things to be excited about. And one of those things that I'm still buzzing about is the multi-divisional national duels, which I wasn't going to go to for a while. You were going to fly out. I got in on it late, and I loved every second of it. I loved every second of it. It was so much fun. It was a throwback for me back to 2011 when it was at the Dome. It didn't matter that the D1 schools weren't there. I had a blast. And I think you said it too. There was as much energy and enthusiasm for consolation matches.
It was incredible.
I just think about it. I'm getting chills right now thinking about this. So just so you know, multi-divisional national duels, Division II, Division III, NAIA, junior college for the men. And then this is the first year they had the NCAA division for women, and then they had an NAIA division for the women. I didn't miss any, did I? Six divisions, and I think that would be it. Plus a high school tournament was there and a kids tournament. So there were 40 mats. Admittedly, it was impossible to wrap your head around it. I mean, the first day of competition, I didn't see any Division III because it was in another hall, and we had to have our computer set up and couldn't get into Wi-Fi, so we had to be hard-lined in. So I didn't see any of that. But the next day, I saw some D3. I saw Coke College wrestle. It was a consolation match, and they were acting like this was a national championship on the line, and they were behind it. They were excited. So many great moments. I hope you had as much fun as I did. It was a blast.
You got to see our guy, John Broughton.
Yeah, I did.
Win a big, big match.
Yeah, that was cool.
John Broughton, who is the mastermind behind those incredible videos that you see on Track Wrestling.
The best.
From the World Championships.
The best videos.
Sizzle reels. They're exceptionally well done. Came back for his final semester at UW-Whitewater and knocked off the number 10 guy in the country in overtime. I missed it, but you got
to
see it.
I didn't actually get to see it. Okay. I saw the reaction. So I came in. He had just won. and he was higher than a kite. He said, you better get out of here because I'm going to give you a hug. And he was saying he loved me and all of these things. So it was one of those things. And I get that feeling. Very rarely do you get that feeling in life where you're just absolutely on cloud nine, and he had it. So get that sudden victory win. And he's a scrambler, so he gives you those heart attack matches. And so I went back and watched it. And of course it was one of those, because he'll dive through and come out the back door and scramble and just flounder around, which really does make it hard to watch because you're
probably
not
going to see a lot of John Broughton clips on no. fundamental wrestling highlight shows.
Not at all. But it just, it really, the entire weekend solidified why I love this sport, why I got involved in this sport was what took place at the multi-divisional national duels. And it didn't have a Division I team there. And just a couple highlights. Wartburg-Augsburg, Battle of the Bergs. Hopefully you know about this rivalry because it's transcended our sport. It was on the front page of the New York Times in 2012, for goodness sake. But it came down to them again. You have Wartburg gives up two falls, and you think it's over, and then they pin their returning NCAA champion the next match. I mean, just absolutely bonkers. And then Wartburg, it looks like they aren't going to win it, but then they end up winning the national duel title at Division III. D2, it comes down to half a second. St. Cloud State still would have won if they would have given up a major decision, but it would have been fun to see it go to criteria. That happened, and then, what, 19-19 for the NCAA division, or division for women's, came down to 19-19. It took 20 minutes to decide who was going to win there. So a few of the highlights.
Yeah, McKendree against Simon Frazier there. Wartburg-Augsburg might be one of the strangest duels. I shouldn't even say might be. It was one of the strangest duels that I've ever seen. You've got back-to-back matches where guys are winning and got pinned. Three national champions lost in that duel meet. Wartburg knocked off three national champions from Augsburg in that. I don't know that I've ever seen either one of those things happen in a duel meet in my entire life, where back-to-back matches where somebody's winning and they got pinned. And then I can't ever recall seeing a duel where three national champions lost.
And they barely made it. I think they won 21-20 to actually make it to the semis. They won in the quarters.
22-20, yeah, in the quarters, yep.
Yeah, and they had a couple guys out, one or two. I know Rump was out of the lineup for those, which is one of their top guys. But still, you shake your head and you wonder, how do these things play out the way they do? But again, it goes to why dual meets are important, why I think we need an NCAA championship that includes dual meets. I just think it's absolutely essential. And here we are now. You follow the sport and you see a dual meet result. We've gone through this. You see it, and it's just an exhibition now. And you just say, nah, you look through the score. They didn't have their best guys in there. That doesn't really matter that much. It just, you shake your head at why we can't understand this concept that, what do you want to do? You covered football. How many people went out there and tailgated before for what, 6 hours before a 4 o'clock kickoff?
Dozens of thousands.
Yeah. And that's what they want to do. They want to party. They want to watch a game for a little bit, and then they want to go party more. They don't want to sit at a tournament for 2 days straight and breathe like, oh, we got a lunch break. We finally are able to get away for an hour, and then you got to go back to it. Everyone wears down from that. Even the diehards wear down from that. I mean, I saw Kenny Mundy, and I was doing the same thing. You just are like, you've seen so much, and then you start looking at your phone, and you can't get dialed in. But when you got a team that you're locked into, you can go watch them. Hour and a half to 2 hours, and you get to go take a break and you get to do something. It's a pretty simple concept that it's pretty amazing that we are this strong in our sport and we don't have that fundamental principle that Bob Bowlsby talks about. You wrestle one way and you have a championship the other. Kudos to us for having a strong enough sport to survive that, because it really doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I don't know that too many people are going to be tailgating in Iowa in the middle of January, Kyle, but I concur with the point you're trying to make there. I do know that out at Final X, out at Rutgers this past summer, the tailgating environment was awesome. But to your point, yeah, I mean, it's such an easier concept to follow for the casual fan. You know, they can identify with a specific school. And that event, if you're, we talked about this, if you're there for a specific a specific program you're following. What an incredible event to go watch your team compete in 4-5 high-level dual meets. I don't know that, you know, it's a lot to consume if you're not there for one specific school. If you're trying to follow the entire tournament, it's almost impossible, to your point, to be able to just consume it as a fan. But what an amazing event if you're a fan of a certain school.
Yeah,
especially if you're a Grandview fan.
Oh,
40-0,
gee.
Kyle. 40-0 in the NAIA final. Think about what they've done in the last 9 years. They've scored 234.5 points. They won by 160 points one time. They've had 12 All-Americans one time. And 40-0 in the National Duels Finals, I think that that racks up there with, or that ranks right up there with some of the absurd statistics that Nick Mitchell and his staff, their outfit, has accomplished here in the last 9 years.
Completely ridiculous. Completely insane. It's a... They beat a team who was led by a former Grandview wrestler, Omi Acosta, who came in on fire. It looked like they were going to maybe not challenge him, but at least pick up a couple matches. And it's a fiery squad, and they had no fire on the sideline, just none. And Grandview just took the life out of them. And
no
what
pun
they're,
intended. Yeah, maybe pun intended.
Yeah, pun intended. It wasn't, but now that I've said it, I'm going to give kudos to myself for actually coming up with that. But they really did, man. They just keep getting better through the rounds. And that's what really, really high-level teams do, is they just keep getting better, and their best performance comes in the finals, and it certainly did for Grandview. And I hope this is a program that our listeners are checked into, because what they're going to win 9 in a row. Of course, Nick Mitchell doesn't want to hear that, but they will win 9 in a row this year. And for the state of Iowa, that would tie Dan Gable for the most national championships in a row within the state of Iowa. Remarkable what they've done at Grandview. And when you lived in Des Moines, I hope people were checked into the program and feeling the vibe of such a great, great institution for wrestling.
Yeah, it's incredible what they're doing. Absolutely incredible.
Now, the women's side, it was interesting because you had a split this year. You had NCAA and you had NAI. There was a couple coaches that said, hey, we'd love to see them all mesh together, but it certainly does lead to some history. And McKendry was pretty fired up on the sideline. You talk about Omi Acosta, and we talked about how excited they get. Sam Schmitz from McKendry, he's as fiery too, man. He's over there on the sideline, and we talk about why we're buzzing, why we're excited about this. The women's product is really good right now, and they get behind it too, and they are as enthusiastic about what happens on the side of the mat as they are on the mat, and they get after it. All the bench is behind it, and I just think that really is a good thing for women's wrestling to see the support they get just from their teammates, and whether there's fans in the stands or not, there was a pretty good amount there, but just to see the enthusiasm, it really is infectious. You get behind it and you just say, wow, this is something that really means a lot to these girls, which is great to see.
Pretty high level wrestling in that dual meet too, with McKendry and Simon Fraser. You had 10 world teamers, 4 world medalists in that dual meet, if I'm not mistaken.
Is that what it was?
And it goes down to criteria 19-19.
It took 20 minutes to
just to sort out the criteria,
sort it out. But again, it just goes back to why the dual meet concept, and it gets funny in dual meets. It just really does. You just never know what's going to happen. And it probably would never happen that way at a national championship event for a tournament. But yeah, and you get to see your guys in succession. You don't have to wait for several hours maybe to see the wrestler you want to see. And as we've talked about what happens at the world championships, 9 days in a row, you think about 9 days in a row where we're over there. And if an American gets knocked off and you don't get to see him for a while, you have to find other things to occupy yourself if you're there as a fan. And that's just a really tough concept to wrap your head around. And this really makes it tight, and you're able to just focus on that time frame. It really makes sense. I hope more people will get on board with it. And we have a guest today that I know is on board with a national dual meet concept. We have Mike Moyer going to kick off the year for us from the National Wrestling Coaches Association, and I'm sure he'll have a lot to say. But when you think about the national duels and what you just saw, do you think it's possible? Do you think we can get Division I on board for this, or do you think it's so split down the middle that it's going to take longer than we could ever imagine?
I think it's got to happen. I think it will happen. I mean, it just like look at attendance for dual meets across the country. Look what has happened this year for dual meets across the country. You got, you know, Arizona State crushing its attendance record when Penn State comes to town, an incredibly dramatic dual meet. And that's just one isolated case. And, you know, Arizona State just wrestled at Ohio State in a barn burner of a dual meet that comes down to the wire in front of a packed arena. So, you know, you go back to Bob Bowlesby, you mentioned him. That was the thing he said, is that for the casual observer, it's a lot easier for them to identify with the dual meet concept than it is, you know, the individual tournament format.
And it's a Jay Robinson principle. Party, 2 hours a duel, party more. It's just, it's what you want to do. And it's just the way we consume our athletics right now. People want to have a good time. They want to put a few toddies in their bodies. And
mint juleps. You want to sneak juleps, out in between yeah. rounds, have a mint julep.
I know for us, I certainly don't want one if it's at the Blue Horse. Boy, that was a that was something else. But it really does bode well for a fan-friendly environment. And when you can just finally catch your breath and you can sneak out to have lunch, that's probably not going to bring a lot of fans back. And you just think about all the tournaments we go to. Like you say, what draws them in? It's a two-hour dual meet. And the more we can get into that concept, the better. It's just too bad that we just don't have anything that replicates what the National Duels is. And we drive that home because it's so important to some of our best memories have been because of that, was because of the National Duels. And you go back to Shelton Benjamin pinning Wes Hand. They were down by 5. He gets a fall and Minnesota wins 18-17 or 19-18, whatever it was. There's just so many memories like that. And it's because it's the dual meet concept. So kudos to the multi-divisional National Duels. It really did make me realize why I love this sport going to that. It really is that pure part of the sport. And it's, they're doing it for the right reasons. And I think there's so much good that can come out of it.
Hey, your first trip to Louisville, and Louisville has been a player trying to get the NCAA championships, the Division I championships to the KFC Yum Center. What are your thoughts on it? You like to see the NCAAs go down there?
I would. And I'm now one of those guys that doesn't want it to stay in one location. I think at one point it was always about St. Louis is centrally located. Let's have it there. It makes it fair. And I'm not for that in any way. Like, going to New York City was good. I think being up in Minnesota is going to be good. I like seeing it out in Pennsylvania. I just would like to see it more diverse. I'd like to see it go on the West Coast. Phoenix has been brought up, Las Vegas. I think Louisville would be a great place to do it, primarily because it really does bring a lot of attention to the event, because you know as well as I do, wherever they have it, it will sell out. And why wouldn't you bring that energy and enthusiasm to a different part of the country? So St. Louis, let's maybe cycle it through once every 10 to 20 years, but let's branch out.
You're saying once every 20 years, Kyle?
I said 10 to 20.
10 to 20,
yeah,
okay.
So I'm giving myself 19. A window. Yeah, it could be 19.
Could be 11.
I like St. Louis, too. I like it being there, but why not diversify a little bit and get it to places that you normally don't get to? Phoenix is the one that sounds appealing to me. It's in
Staples
March.
Center, LA.
Oh, it'd be great. Absolutely. I mean, keep throwing out names and I'm going to agree with you as long as it's kind of moving things around. And I don't know if there's probably an arena in Montana or Wyoming that could hold it. So I might have to put the kibosh on agreeing with that, but if it has an arena that can hold it, let's find a way to get it there. And we're looking at trying to set the all-time record in Minnesota this year, but I think we can spread it around. And I don't know, it seemed like some people got mad about New York City in 2016. Why get mad about that? You're at Madison Square Garden. That's awesome, man.
I loved it.
I did too. I thought it was great.
I one of the big challenges with covering NCAA wrestling from a media standpoint is by the time you leave, there's nowhere to eat. There's nothing still left open.
Yeah.
And that was not a problem in New York City.
Yeah. It wouldn't be.
Plenty
would
of
it?
Dining options around midnight.
Yeah. But the more we can get it around there, Louisville would be a great location.
I mean, I enjoyed Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh is, I love Pittsburgh. I thought it was a beautiful city. I hope it gets back there. Philadelphia was in 2011.
Cleveland was fun with D3s leading off the previous weekend, followed by D1s. Coldest place I think I've ever been, though. That wind whipping in off the lake, boy.
It was cold. Michigan, I think there's some opportunities there to maybe get it back there. So
yeah, it's going to Detroit here in a couple of years.
Yeah, so a lot of good opportunities there, and hopefully we can see a West Coast, because who wouldn't want to have the opportunity to go to some warm weather to March? It can warm up a little bit in March, but I'm pretty sure in Minneapolis it's going to be pretty cold. I think it's going to have, I think there's going to be a little bite up there. So before we get to Mike Moyer, any thoughts from you on what took place at the National Duels that stood out to you?
Just Life University, man. Omi. Omi is our homie.
Yeah. It's your idea to get that shirt going. I think it could be a good concept.
I don't know that there's a more animated coach in college wrestling. And I tweeted this the other day, that there's not a coach who embodies a program named Life University who could embody it better than Omi Acosta.
Dude's on fire, man.
Yeah.
That dude is on fire. Hey, you don't even have to watch wrestling. You just watch the bench. Cause he actually had his guys flex. I think he told him, hey, flex
for the camera.
Yeah. And you were there to catch the flex, which is really cool. And as we get into D1 here, we're coming down the wire. Iowa has extended their lead in the track wrestling NCAA tournament poll. They are the favorite right now. You get some people saying that they're a lock. I never like hearing that or saying that. Because
you just said Grandview's a lock.
Well, that's different. That's absolutely different, because I have verifiable proof. When you beat a team by, what'd you say, it was 160 points. What was the gap?
Well, one year they won by 160.
Yeah, so the 1 year, there's just enough data there that that is a lock. Yeah, but when you're saying that Iowa might be a lock against a team that's like Grandview, which is Penn State, which has won 8 of the last 9, I still think you have to respect the game.
Sure.
You have to respect their game. And you saw what happened to Penn State. They lost 2 guys this year. Kassar's out. You're returning NCAA champion. What if something happens to Iowa along the line? You just you have to, and you know as well as anyone that Tom and Terry Brand certainly aren't thinking they're a lock, that they have a lot of work to do. So, yeah, is Iowa the favorite right now? Of course they are. You look at the numbers. And
9 guys in the top 4.
Man, and what they've done, though, what, back-to-back 41-0?
29-1 in Big Ten dual matches right now.
Whew. And they look good against Purdue and Indiana. They just and they train through that, and they have a nice stretch here where really
Purdue's got a good team.
They do.
You know, a top 10 team in our rankings.
And they're coming into the heart of their schedule where they have Ohio State, Nebraska, Penn State, and those teams are all at home. So Hawkeye fans should be excited about what's coming up. And wrestling should be excited about this, because it really does help that Iowa has a great team going into the NCAA championships, which happens to be in Minneapolis. This is going to be a really good thing, and excited to see what happens. Any thoughts before we get to Mike Moyer?
I have none. Let's get to Mike Moyer.
All right, let's do it. Our guest today is Mike Moyer, Executive Director of the National Wrestling Coaches Association, and the man that is going to lead us to a dual meet NCAA championship. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing good.
We got to get this going, man. I'm still buzzing from the multi-divisional version of the National Duels, and there wasn't D1 component, but you were there for that in Louisville, Kentucky. How did you feel like the event went?
Well, it's one of my favorite events of the year. I haven't had time to do the math, but my guess is probably somewhere around 50% of those 92 teams that were at the National Duels have been established just since the year 2000. So it's remarkable to think that not only could we be establishing so many new programs, but how quickly a new program can be nationally competitive. And it's just, again, it's a great opportunity. It's a great event for us to celebrate the extraordinary renaissance that we're seeing in college wrestling, both on the men's and the women's side. And what I love about a dual meet is that so often the winner is determined not necessarily by what the superstars do, but sometimes more so by what the maybe the wrestler with average to below average ability does. It might be not getting pinned by a formidable opponent. It might be not giving up a bonus point. It might be, but it's not unusual where you see the hero of the dual meet is maybe the one who lost by the biggest point differential, but just didn't get pinned. And that's something that an average fan that's maybe not a diehard wrestling fan can get excited about. And it's something that those wrestlers that are in a support role can get really excited about and say, not only does this really help us at the college level, but it would really help our participation numbers at the high school level. And so a great event. It continues to grow every year. We did add, we had six regional high school teams that were participating to qualify for the Kentucky High School State Dual Meet Championship. So we were able to just incorporate that into this college event. And every year we hope we can just keep adding more components to it and make it more and more of a premier event and just keep making progress.
Mike, I hear you talk a lot about the guy who's, you know, at the end of the bench or not the, you know, the superstar type of wrestler. And you've done great work in building small college numbers up. What's driven you to become such a champion for the little guy in the sport?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm from a family of educators. I mean, everybody in my family is that my father was a high school wrestling coach and a biology teacher for 35 years. My grandmother was a music teacher for 49 years. My uncle was a principal. I could go on and on and on and on. But I believe in my heart that the educational value of our sport is so significant. And it teaches, and it's not just the sport of wrestling. I think the sport of wrestling sort of sets the table. But what really the most instrumental part in developing these life skills in these young student athletes are great coaches. And we have great coaches in our sport at every level. And they do so many, particularly at this National Duels that we just had, so many of them do so much with so little resources. I mean, you talk about one-arm paper hangers, right? I mean, they do it all. They're washing the mats and they're doing laundry and they're fundraising and they're teaching technique. But the impact that they have in the lives of these young men and women, it's hard to ever measure, but it's significant. And for me, it's what really motivates me to do what I do every day. And don't get me wrong. I love to celebrate the heroes and champions of our sport. That's very important as well. It's important to have all the above. But in our sport, if we keep growing the base, if we keep figuring out how to get more students in our sport and how to keep them longer, our Olympic and world efforts will get better as well, because there'll just be a bigger pool from which they can select, our future world and Olympic teams from.
How do you find these stories of wrestlers who virtually have no on the mat credentials, but parlayed that into success elsewhere? Where are you finding these stories and how do they find you?
Well, the real heroes, even in most of these new college programs we get started, are the business people who write the checks to help us with startup funds and to fund the CEO Leadership Academy. And so many of these benefactors were just like kind of average to below average wrestlers, extraordinary people. But, maybe not the most gifted athletes, but attribute so much of their personal and professional success to lessons learned on our wrestling mat. And don't get me wrong, we also have some extraordinary wrestlers who have become very generous benefactors as well. But I just, I could never give back to the sport what I've gained from it. But I would say at the top of the list of what I gained from it is it, I don't know, there's few other things that you could do that are better at just teaching you how to do really, really, really tough things. And let's face it, sometimes life can be really, really tough. And I think in our society, our society needs what wrestling represents. It also, one of our title sponsors, the United States Marine Corps, and our society needs that as well. And so it's a really, really challenging sport. And that's one of the reasons that everybody should do it.
You were at Beast of the East promoting the possible addition of the University of Delaware getting a wrestling program. How do we get traction on that? And how do we follow through to make sure that that becomes a reality?
Well, one of our primary strategies is through an operating division within the National Wrestling Coaches Association called Wrestlers and Business Network. And we have 20 chapters up and around the country, and we want to have hundreds of chapters up and around the country. And these chapters have events that are primarily designed to be networking events where business people can network with other business people, all that have a common love and an interest in the sport of wrestling. And they're also, they have activities and initiatives designed to provide career opportunities for our high school and college wrestlers. Could be internships and apprenticeships. But what I've learned from these chapter events is it creates a gravitational pull that can reconnect with so many wrestling people who have been disconnected over the years. When we lost those 550 college wrestling teams between 1972 and 1999, just think about how many wrestling alumni have drifted away from our sport. They don't have a program at their alma mater and to keep them connected. And so they've drifted away. And so these chapters, have been able to pull a lot of these people back. And so the Delaware chapter, the event that we had in conjunction with the Beast of the East, is a perfect example. When you think of who was part of that panel, we had two themes that night. One theme was, let's work together to bring back an intercollegiate wrestling program at University of Delaware. And the other theme was, let's galvanize the wrestling community to take down cancer. Cancer is something that impacts all of us in one way or another. So on that panel, you have the U.S. Senator representing Delaware, Chris Coons, who wrestled in high school. You have the majority leader in the Delaware State Senate, Nicole Poor, who's a wrestling mom. You have one of the top neurosurgeons in oncology in the country at Johns Hopkins is on the panel. You've got Dan Gable. You have these iconic people. And then when you hear someone like the U.S. Senator Chris Coons from Delaware say, we're going to work hard to bring this wrestling program at University of Delaware back. I mean, that's extraordinary when you think this little wrestler and business network in Delaware, it's been in existence for 1 year, could pull together a group of people like that. And that's what we're seeing around the country. I mean, we're just... these chapters, few things that are more impactful than to get high profile, influential business people in any geographic region. You get them organized. And when that happens, anything is possible.
Mike, one of the things that I hear you talk about a lot is that statistic, number of programs that exist now, more than half of them have come into play since 2000. And you mentioned, how the sport got beat up there in terms of numbers from 74 to 99. And you came in right about 2000, right? Wasn't that about when you joined the NWCA?
Yep, 1999. Okay. Yeah, 1999.
Can you take us back to that first year or so when you assess the landscape of college wrestling at that point and what needs to be done in terms of turning that trend around and getting it on the path that we're on now in terms of adding programs. What needed to be done then? What were your early plans and how did we get to this point?
Well, clearly we were just getting clobbered, but one of the things that really needs to be said, that some of the real heroes in the National Wrestling Coaches Association, it's been around since 1928, but one of the great mentors in my life was Coach Bob Bubb, former coach at Clarion, who was the first executive director of the NWCA. I mean, he was working in his garage up in Clarion, Pennsylvania. And I mean, we didn't have a computer back then. And like, for the life of me, I don't know how he did what he did, knowing what I know with what we have today. But it was people like Coach Bubb and the boards of directors going all the way back to 1928 for our organization that just kept positioning our organization for the next big thing and for the next big thing. But I think what happened is the current was so strong against not just wrestling, but the Olympic men's sports in general. And we were just getting clobbered, and it was obvious that we needed more paid full-time people that were working on our sport on a day-to-day basis. And so Coach Bubb was, you know, not only did he position the organization to be able to bring on full-time staff, but I mean, he did it with smoke and mirrors. And So there was really a couple things when we started. You know, one of the big crises in 1999 is we had just had three college wrestlers were tragically killed within a 30-day period through, you know, excessive weight loss activities. And, you know, that didn't, you know, when you recognize all the college programs we were losing as it was, that certainly wasn't helping things. And so we had to make sure that we fixed that. So, you know, the NWCA worked with sports scientists from around the country to put safeguards in place that, you know, to make sure nothing like that would ever happen again. It's certainly not a perfect system, but it's a whole lot better than it's ever been. And today, our sport's uniquely positioned to be viewed as the ultimate physical fitness sport. I mean, you think of what childhood obesity is and the threat it is to our country. And when you talk to the military, one of their challenges in recruiting is just finding students that qualify from a physical fitness standpoint. So we've been able to take what's been a lemon for our sport for a long, long time and make the proverbial lemonade out of it. And we're still getting better. We're still improving it. But that was something that we had to get past, that perception, that unhealthy weight loss perception that a lot of non-wrestling people had about our sport. And then the second piece was we really needed, I mean, institutional funding for athletics. It doesn't matter if it's at middle school, if it's at high school, if it's at college, but institutional funding for athletics is getting more and more stressed. And, you know, it wasn't rocket science even back in 1999 to know that this arms race in big college sports was going to accelerate. And so it was the development of the coaching education program, the coaching development programs we have. Today we know it as the CEO Leadership Academy. And just helping our coaches strengthen their CEO skills in fundraising and marketing and recruiting and retention. And those core CEO skills, it's really interesting. But if you look at, and I actually have this, you can look at a chart that from like 1999 to 2010, was when we were developing these coaching development resources, but we didn't have them in place. We were just developing. We're trying to find funding, trying to develop them. But during that 10-year span, on most years, we were losing more programs than we were starting. And it all goes, there's no substitute for having these, you know, head coaches at every level that have these strong skills. So it took us about 3 years to implement the CEO Leadership Academy from like 2009 to 2012. But since it's been fully implemented, we've been adding unprecedented numbers of new college programs, and our losses have been minimal. You know, so we've in the last 4 or 5 years, we've been adding, you know, 25 to 30 new college teams a year. And our losses might be two or three. And even a lot of those losses are where an entire school might go bankrupt. So the coaching development piece is a really, really big piece of this. And we've now migrated, we've taken a page out of our college leadership academy, and we now have a high school and a middle school version. It really focuses on recruitment and retention. And, you know, last year we put nearly 1,000 coaches, high school, middle school coaches, through that training completely free of charge. compliments of benefactors and the United States Marine Corps. And so I think that's really, you know, certainly as an organization, I wish we could cover more ground, but we really want to make sure we dedicate our resources and our time and our energy where we can make the greatest impact. And so it's really been in these, in, you know, in this area, it's been in this area of student wrestler well-being. I mean, a coach's number one responsibility to an athlete is the health and safety. So getting past this weight management stigma has been a big plus. It's developing very proficient coaches with these CEO skills. We've come a long, long way in that regard. And then it's about starting as many new programs as we can while we try to protect, you know, some of the vulnerable ones we have, which is probably the most recent really big focus we have. Is we've been working with a recently retired executive from Deloitte Consulting. This is a wrestling person who's helped us develop a very internal confidential report card for every college wrestling program in the country. And we look at key indicators, and not just about the wrestling program itself, but we can look at things like the size of the school's endowment, how much financial aid they allocate based on their endowment. So for the first time ever, we can be much more targeted at where we put our time and resources in each college division to make sure that we're strengthening our most vulnerable programs as we're adding all these new programs.
Mike, the last two times we've seen you, it was Delaware and it was Kentucky, and there were two major events there, but those are states that are not known for having great wrestling traditions. Do you feel like we're making a dent? Are we making an impact in those states that maybe don't have the perceived wrestling tradition?
Well, for sure. I mean, you think about, we've just added our first ever Division I college wrestling program in the state of Arkansas. We've added our first ever Division I men's and women's program at Presbyterian College in South Carolina. So it's one of these things that the low-hanging fruit are kind of Division II, Division III, NAIA, junior college, women enrollment-driven schools. But what I've seen is as we take advantage of the low-hanging fruit, it just leads to bigger opportunities, you know. And I mean, right now we have six Division I programs migrating into, at various stages of migration into Division I. And so when we think about where these programs are located, you got Long Island University, you know, which high school wrestling is terrific up there, but the only two Division I programs are LIU and Hofstra. And then of course you got the Coast Guard Academy, and we got Cal Baptist. You know, obviously college wrestling in the far west is really fragile, so I mean, that's a great opportunity. We have Bellarmine University in Kentucky, a Division II program that was started 4 or 5 years ago that's migrating into Division I. So, an event like the National Duels that we have in Kentucky is what raises awareness and creates those opportunities like Bellarmine. So it's just, you know, it's that old adage, if at first you succeed, do it again and again and again. And if at first you don't succeed, you do something different. That's probably how we try to do it.
How much influence has Dan Gable had on this sport?
Oh, tremendous. And quite frankly, he has been a terrific just sort of advisor for me. I mean, there's no doubt that why he was so incredibly successful as a coach. I mean, there's been a couple times along the way where I'm just not sure we're going to see our way through something. And he has such an unbelievable way of taking something that's complex and making it seem so simple. And he's also, I can't remember a time where he ever said he couldn't do something. I mean, he just really cares deeply about the sport. And one of the other things I hear him say a lot is, obviously, when you're coaching, you need to be very narrowly focused on your program. And it's not till you retire and you get out where you can see wrestling in a very different light. And, you know, currently, he's that person. And boy, thank goodness we have him in our sport.
We talked about the national duels at the beginning of this interview. Now we just have to get down to how are we going to make this happen at the Division I level? We are in a spot where we virtually have no reason to have dual meets other than they're fun. They're an exhibition. We had a national dual meet concept that went away a couple years ago. Where are we? Can we make this happen? And how are we going to make it happen, Mike?
Well, the I watched the Ohio State Arizona State dual meet on television a couple Mondays ago, and I mean it was an incredibly exciting dual meet. In fact, I was watching it with someone that really doesn't know much about our sport, but. You know, one of the things that determined who actually won, in fact, it was one of those matches, not to use the old cliche, but it was really a shame that somebody had to lose that dual meet because it was just so entertaining. But what a dual meet typically comes down to is not necessarily what your superstars do, but a lot of times it boils down to, you know, maybe what the freshman can do against the senior or what the freshman can do against the number one ranked wrestler in the country. And I was watching the freshman from Ohio State wrestling Valencia, number one ranked wrestler. And I don't know, the score seemed like it was like 300-6. I think it was like 19-6, something like that. But that wrestler from Ohio State literally was the hero of the night. The crowd was on its feet and the people were going crazy. And he was a hero because he didn't get pinned. And whether it's the college level or it's the high school level, when I think of every mainstream spectator sport in America, they really just have two things in common. You know, it's the level of importance of every competition matters a lot. And then secondly, it's the less predictable the outcome, the more fan-friendly and media-friendly the event typically is. So, there's a Blue Ribbon Task Force that's high level administrators that's been working over the last 3 years to try to come up with some concepts that they think would really help Division I wrestling grow the most. And those recommendations have been sent out to all the conferences. They've been shared with the coaches. And like, I'm not hung up on how we get back to the dual meet concept, as long as we just figure out a way to get back to it. Like sometimes we have such our notions that there's the only way this can be done is in a certain way. And sometimes somebody just sitting in a room says, what if we did it this way? And so I'm hoping that with so much conversation around the dual meet, and I'm hoping with the wisdom of some iconic administrators that are part of this Blue Ribbon Task Force, that somehow through a really good, inclusive, transparent process, we can come up with some format that, you know, our coaches feel good about. And, there'll be a lot more coming over the next, once we get through the season and the spring gets here, there'll be a lot more conversation around this. And, but I just hope that somehow, in addition to that incredible national wrestling championship that we currently have, that somehow there's a way that we can back to this incredible dual meet, you know, a way of just strengthening that part of our sport. So there'll be a lot more discussion. It's going to be hard over the next couple months, you know, while the season's underway, but as soon as the season's over, it'll be a little bit easier to get everybody's attention back on this and see where we can go from here.
What do you think it might look like? A combination of the NCAA championships as we know it right now, the traditional plus dual meets, and combining those two separate where they give two championships? What could it be?
Well, I mean, it could be so many different things, and I really don't. I just want to hear from our constituents across the country that, you know, it does seem like everyone recognizes. I mean, we have some incredible rivalries that are out there now. You know, it's when, you know, Michigan wrestles Ohio State, or the Oklahoma State, or the Iowa State, or some of the Ivy League rivalries. I mean, we have some traditional rivalries that really give you a pretty good idea of what it could be. the question is just how do we create more of those rivalries where every dual meet, you know, just has this highest importance. And like I said, I'm not hung up on any one way of doing it. But you know, we have great coaches out there and we have a lot of really, you know, supportive administrators that, you know, work with a lot of different sport groups. And I'm hopeful that we can, using a good process, come up with something that everybody really buys into.
Doesn't it seem exceedingly simple though? I think maybe we've made this more complex. You look at the football model, even if you look at the NFLs, they have the same amount of games and you have seeding and you have a great playoff system. Why not just adopt something like that and move forward?
Well, I think that every sport is a little different. I mean, you know, on one hand, it does seem relatively simple, but the circumstances of our 79 Division I programs are just so varied. You know, they're varied in the way of the amount of scholarships that the different programs have. They're varied in resources in general. And it is complicated. In fairness to the coaches, it is complicated. And but it's one of those things where if we keep talking about it and we keep good, open, honest dialogue, I'm confident that we'll get to the right place. But process is everything. I would say that this time around, just because we have more staff, we have more things in place, you know, the process is much better. And it would be great. It would be great for our sport at every level. And as I said, it's not for me, it's not just at the college level. But if you ask me, you know, what's one of the what would make the biggest impact at the high school level? I go back to the dual meet where the performance of every student on the team contributes to the success of the team. And the ordinary fan that might not know much about wrestling just gets it, right? I mean, just one team versus the other team, and this wrestler is a freshman, and that wrestler is ranked number one, and this wrestler can't get pinned. You know, just simple things like that the fans can really sort of buy into. I would also say this, one of the things that's in all the time that I'm doing this, is anything that we can do to make wrestling more relevant on each campus and in each community is really, really important. That's one of the downsides of these big national tournaments, where they might make a sport relevant on the campus of whatever school is hosting that tournament. But I can't think of very many ways, if any additional way, to make wrestling relevant on a campus and in a community than through a very exciting dual meet with a conference rival or even someone out of the conference that's, you know, could be a rival. But I coached at George Mason University for 10 years. You know, back then I think we had 3.5 scholarships. And so you could just imagine through the eyes of a coach that has a situation like that, that may have to be in dual meets with fully funded programs. You know, that's just like one example of how this is complicated. You know, in football and basketball, everybody's fully funded. You know, so you don't have that dynamic. And that's, there's no doubt that plays into some of the challenges with trying to do something like this in wrestling.
I don't know exactly how many college programs there are across the board when you combine everything together, but whatever that number is.
470.
Okay. 470. Of those 470, how many of those do you know the head coach personally?
I'd say most of them. I mean, we've, you know, as we start these new programs, it's, and through our leadership academy, and, you know, we do stay connected with a lot of these coaches on a lot of different levels. You know, we've, as our staff has grown, there's so much more we can do to support the coaches and their programs and help them with whatever challenges they have. And I always try to get out to as many competitions as I can. I went to the Midlands this year, and I just purposely try to get out to as many of these programs just so we know what's on their mind. You know, a tournament like the Beast of the East is great because you get to know what's on a high school coach's mind. And it's just important, and it's hard, you know, because sometimes you get, you know, just running the business side of the NWCA can be very consuming It's just, you have to make sure that you're, you know, that we take enough time to get out there in person and make sure we have a good handle on what the coaches need and what kind of support we can provide for them.
Of those 470, how many get mad at you at some point?
I'd say most.
Do they?
I would say maybe my last day will be when they're all equally mad at me, you know, maybe, but it's, as I said, there's certainly nothing easy about doing this, but it's incredibly fulfilling. And, you know, we just try to do the best things, you know, the best things we can for the best reasons that are out there. And it's just hard until you, it, probably one of the hardest or one of the biggest challenges about the NWCA is the communication piece. It's just really hard when, you know, we have 10,000 members and, you know, it's a little different when you're in like a business to business situation, but like our coaches, you know, some of them are part-time, some of them they're, you know, many of them are just working 80, 90 hours a week. And it's really hard to just pick up a phone and call a coach and coach answers it on the other end. And so the communication piece is something we're trying to get better at as an organization, but it's clearly an area we can do better and we need to do better. But, you know, hopefully we're getting better with each passing year.
Do you like fundraising?
You know, what's really sort of interesting I've been in development most of my life, and I can tell you that it's not something I've ever been comfortable with. But it's so necessary. And that's one of the things I would credit wrestling with teaching me, is to do not just the things you enjoy, but to be able to do things that are really challenging or things that, you know, create a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety. And I think one of the things that's so challenging about the fundraising thing for us is that we try to do everything we can to steer clear of donors who are connected with our existing college programs. We don't want to be redirecting any monies away from our existing programs to what we're doing. There are some benefactors out there that have enough capacity to help us and their alma mater and USA Wrestling and the Hall of Fame without it being at the expense of one or the other. But, you know, what's unnerving is that we know we have these great opportunities and the stakes are really high when you go out to a benefactor and you make that ask. And it's not like there's three other people you could go to if the answer is no. And so we've been very, very blessed over the years that our benefactors have just, you know, almost all of them have been with us from day one. And when they join the organization, they stay with the organization. And but we owe it to them to just keep expanding our donor base. And we also owe it to them to do everything we can to create partnerships and to try to create as much recurring programming revenue to at least try to mitigate our dependency on donations to the extent that we can. But it's not anything that I ever had any formal training in, but I've always been in a situation, whether it's been as a coach or doing this, that you can have the greatest game plan in the world, but if you don't have the money to execute it, you're not going anywhere. So we try to say that in our leadership academy with our coaches. You know, few coaches have gotten into coaching because they want to be fundraisers. But it is a critical part of being a coach, and you really probably shouldn't be a coach if that's not something you're willing to do, whether you're comfortable doing it or not.
Finally, we'll end with this, Michael. We talk about the value of the sport and how it influences a person, namely you. How did getting beat by Jim Zaleski influence you?
That's a good question. So I was, you know, I was that guy that was picked last in phys ed class. I was not a very good athlete. And if it involved like a ball, you know, I remember as a health and phys ed major, I would be double dribbling and shooting underhanded. But generally speaking, like if I could get on top, I could pin somebody that was a lot better than me. And so I remember that fateful match at Princeton where I got to be on top. And I'm thinking, great, this is right where I want Mr. Zaleski to be. And I think, I don't know if there's something faster than a nanosecond. I just never saw somebody come off the bottom like Jim Zaleski. And I mean, just what a great competitor. And today we're very, very good friends. But I just The other thing I remember vividly about that match is I was in on several high crotches, and I literally felt like I was trying to pick Jadwin Jim up off the foundation. I mean, I just never felt, I couldn't believe we were the same weight. He was just so strong. And to this day, when I see him, you know, I'd like a rematch, but I would like a 20-point lead. And I would like there to be no more than 10 seconds left on the match. And I'd like to maybe have maybe legs in, something like that. But he still looks pretty good, and he gets to work out every day. So I don't even know if that's a good idea even today.
Mike Moyer, thanks for the update. The next time we speak, let's have another Division I program we're talking about, and let's have a national dual meet championship.
By the way, we are working on a handful of Division I programs out there. We're making some very nice progress. We don't want to jinx ourselves, but we're cautiously optimistic that there's some good news coming.
We appreciate this. All the best, and we are excited about what the future holds.
Well, thank you for what you guys do to promote the sport.
Mike Moyer, thank you. Wrapping up with Mike Moyer, it sounds like there's some reasons to be optimistic, and it's always fun to hear about additional programs, but it's extra fun when you can hear about the possibility of Division I programs. And as he said, you don't want to jinx it, but there's a couple names that have been thrown out that might be adding college wrestling. And if those happened, I really think it could make a real tangible influence on what college wrestling can do. So let's just continue to follow that storyline and see if that happens. But every time we get Mike Moyer on the line, it's just optimism, and you feel good about the direction of the sport, Andrew.
Yeah, and you know, you have some phrases that you're accustomed to hearing Mike Moyer say, and he loves that statistic. The one that he has told me repeatedly is, now we're to the spot where more than half of the programs that exist now in college wrestling have been established since 2000. That's pretty incredible.
Incredible. And what I like too is when you say, how many programs are there? I don't know the number he knew right away. Hey, 79 D1, 470 yeah. Total. It's just, he has those, and you can tell he lives it, and he lives by those numbers. And the more we get to add to that number, the better you feel. Hey, 500's coming up. And when do we get 500 total programs? But that statistic is really amazing. And a lot of that growth has happened in NAIA, which is great. And you see that trend going, but the more we can have, and since 2000, and those deaths were certainly a real black eye on the sport there for a while. Yeah. And that took a lot of steam out of wrestling, because a lot of new rules were implemented. The reason we have the weigh-in procedures we have right now are because of that. So we're still feeling the effects of those three deaths, but it sounds like there's so many positive things that have happened. And I hope it ends with an NCAA championship for dual meets. That would be the ultimate right there. I hope that happens, Andrew.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
Any final thoughts from you?
Don't really have any, Kyle. Do you?
All right. I think we've covered a lot in this show. It's been a lot of fun. Our first show of the year. For Andrew Hamilton, I am Kyle Klingman. You have been listening to On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.